Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by the great people at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades, finding the right insurance so you're covered. They find the best price possible. And if there is a claim, you will not find a better partner to get you through all the ins and outs as quickly as possible is Purdy Insurance. I don't care whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever your insurance needs may be, Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. While the Houston Rockets were throwing up 27 consecutive misses from beyond the arc, Vegas and Washington were actually playing a highly competitive, fast-paced game last night at T-Mobile Arena. It was 4-4 in the third period.
On the right side, here's Ryan Reeves. Shoves it right point, Derek Englund. Hard to the left, Shea Theodore. The lefty chips one towards the goal, but it got blocked. Stays in the zone for Theodore. He's got some room on the left side. He centers. Right side, score! On cue, Tomas Nosek! 5-4, Vegas! 10 minutes to go in the third period. Second goal of the Stanley Cup playoffs for Tomas Nosek. He delivers the go-ahead goal. Final seconds tick off. Game one in the books. Knights win it 6-4. Tomas Nosek, the game-winning goal. On the ice for the critical offense and on the ice for the critical defense. The Knights beat the Capitals 6-4 and take a 1-0 Stanley Cup final series lead.
Whoever thought we'd hear those words exactly 100 weeks, exactly 100 weeks since the Knights were allowed to start doing business. We said this once, we said it a million times a year ago, they had no players at this date. They had no players. Now they're 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup. Pretty impressive. Great game last night. Let me put it this way. Extremely entertaining game last night. Extremely entertaining game last night. Washington did a lot of really good things last night and still did not win. I think home ice did not hurt.
Tom Wilson hit too late last night?
Yes, it was. It was. I think that you're in a spot, if you were the NHL, to me, this is how I would handle it. I would fine him, but allow him to play. If it happens again, then he gets suspended. You know, I don't want to determine on the ice at this stage removing a player. I would have fined him.
Game check?
Yeah, sure, why not? He was just going to invest it in copper anyway, so what the or whatever, some precious metal. But yeah, I'd fine him. I definitely would fine him. Not suspend him, because I just don't feel like, okay, you know, do I want to change the competitive balance of the series? I mean, even though he sort of did it himself. It's like the Rizzo play. Nick Kingham, the pitcher for the Pirates tonight, and I know Nick. Nick pitched here for the Spikes. If I had to pick one guy, I'm heading into my 13th season of doing the Spikes. If I had to pick one pitcher that I thought was the best pitcher I've seen here, well, I'll say two. The two best I've seen here have been Tony Watson and Nick Kingham. And Kingham was, I mean, he was here all summer. He's in a really tough spot tonight, I think. When Rizzo comes to the plate, do you retaliate? Now, here's why he's in a tough spot. He is not an established veteran. He's a young guy trying to make his way with the big club. And he's a young guy in that clubhouse. Do you go at him tonight on the first at-bat? Because what Rizzo did yesterday was wrong, too. I mean, Rizzo should have been suspended a game for what he did. Play at the plate. Diaz is in front of the plate. Now, if Diaz is behind the plate, then Rizzo absolutely should be sliding to the toward the infield side and getting his right hand down. But Diaz is in front of the plate, and Rizzo is sliding to the inside of home plate. Why? Obviously, to disrupt the play. I think Rizzo should have been suspended for a game for doing that. No more than a game, but a game. Now, I think there was less violence on that play, though, than the fight in the dugout between Cora and Freeze. But, all right, it's a different matter altogether. But the Rizzo, did you see the Rizzo play?
It didn't look right to me. How the umpires deemed it legal, it's like...
Well, it's legal because he was able to touch home plate, but, you know, while making the slide. In other words, he didn't slide so far out where he couldn't touch the plate. But what's the purpose of sliding where he went? It wasn't to avoid the tag. it wasn't avoiding anything.
I think just where Rizzo was, they were saying that he was about 15 feet up when Diaz caught the ball, and then Rizzo made that move where he was sliding then on the infield. If it wouldn't be that far away from, you know, it happened so far away from the plate.
Yeah. It's... I would have suspended him for a game. Part of this, you're trying to protect people. And, of course, ever since Buster Posey got hurt, this rule was put in about sliding. Well, because it's a ground ball, they throw the plate, and then, of course, Diaz then throws it away. Another wonderful play. But, you know, look, I mean, did it determine winning and losing in the game? No. Because the Pirates had a whopping 2 hits in the game. Okay? Both were singles. But again, he is sliding in and he hits Diaz in the back. And Diaz, of course, then airmails the ball down the first base line. And I'm sorry, that's not how business is done. It's not how you do business. Now, of course, Pirate fans will complain because it broke the game open. But your team had a whopping 2 hits yesterday and another bad performance that's been the norm for 2 weeks now. I mean, there were 2 singles. One got wiped out in a double play. I mean, the only time any Pirate got to second base in the game was when they were running to their positions in the field. Boy, John Lester must have been good yesterday. Nah, no, he didn't pitch. Mike Montgomery pitched, spot starter, emergency starter. 2 hits. I'd suspend Rizzo for a game for that.
Phillies have slipped down to third, but hey, at least at one point over the weekend, they were in first place.
I like that team.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what? You know, remember the first week of the season, all the craziness with
handling analytics and handling pitchers and handling lineups. It's amazing nobody has complained about that anymore for a couple reasons. Number one, the Phillies have been winning, so that's always going to lessen any complaint. And number two is, I think Gabe Kapler's adjusted. All right, wait a minute. I got to take more of a common sense baseball approach in combination with my analytics. Now you get fortunate because the Braves went and played the Red Sox, and the Red Sox took two out of three from them. So that helps the cause, okay? The team I worry about are the Nationals. The Nationals are now starting to play some ball. Not bad. They're playing really well. Now, they're not the hottest team in the National League. I mean, that honor goes to the Milwaukee Brewers, who are playing great right now.
Reese Hoskins is okay, by the way.
That was brutal.
Yeah, fouled the ball off his face last night. He goes, "I'm all good, just a little swollen. And on the positive side, I'll get to wear a helmet flap like the cool kids." He has tweeted that out a little while ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gabe said he had a fat cut in the bottom of his lip last night.
Oh, I'll bet he did.
Oof.
I'll bet he did.
Jake Arrieta will be on the mound tonight for the Phillies. Have that for you here on WKOK. That's a 10-10 first pitch tonight. And looks like everything is shaping up nicely for an Aaron Nola, Clayton Kershaw matchup on Thursday.
Ah, Clayton Kershaw. They love it. So I'll tell you that they have hit the Dodgers at a very bad time. The Dodgers are playing really well right now.
Yeah, this could be a defining moment, this road trip for the Phillies for the season.
Well, suddenly out of nowhere, the Dodgers have won, what, 10 of the last 12? Got themselves back on track. Now, it's coincided, what's helped them is Colorado's scuffled a bit. Arizona, after a great start, is really scuffled. Now you've got the Dodgers starting to play better ball. You mentioned Kershaw might be back. That's big. I like the Phillies. I mean, look, they're going to make mistakes that a young team will make. But you know what? Here they are, last week of May. They're 7 games over .500. That's pretty good. Yeah, you know, kind of a little up and down of late. You know, they took two out of three from the Braves, good. Yeah, but then they lost two out of three of the Blue Jays, and of course they lost to the Dodgers last night. They got another game coming up tonight. I mean, it is a big trip for them. No question about that. You know, late error opened the door last night. But they are, I like them. There's a lot of things about that. Hoskins, of course, has been struggling a bit at the plate of late anyway. You know, but Herrera's hitting .332. Santana's now not only getting on base, but he's hitting home runs. He's got 9. He's also leading the team with RBIs. Cesar Hernandez, I think, is steady, gives him good numbers. Franco's got to get his batting average up. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But, Scott Kingery, great start. Now he's slumping. Typical young player. Same thing with Hoskins, great start, slumping. Typical young player. You know, what's typical about it is they get a book on you. When they get a book on you, then they're able to, you know, find your hot spot, your cold spot. They're able to get the shift in the right spot to try and negate what you do. And that's what happens to young players. That's why I've got Pirate fans going, Austin Meadows, and you know I'm not a really big Austin Meadows guy. I never have been. You know, watching him in the minors, I'm like, I don't see it. All right. Well, he's off to an awesome start with the Pirates, and I've had Pirate fans say, see? I'm like, see what? I said, when they get a book on him, then we'll see. If he comes through after they get a book on him and he keeps doing the same thing, and then I said, and you know me, Sean, I'll be the first to say when I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and do a talk show and pretend I'm right on every single thing. I mean, almost all of them. No. I mean, really. If I'm wrong about something, I'll say, look, I wasn't right about it. And that's why, like with Meadows, I said, look, I said, I'm just going on my I saw the guy play two different years. And I don't get it. Now, on the major league level, he's playing great. Okay. But they'll get a book on him. And once they get a book on him, then, okay, now let's just see. And if he adjusts back and shows he's going to have longevity in the game, great. I mean, they all go through it. Look, I remember Aaron Judge last year? Awesome start. Awesome. Boom. And then suddenly, he had that streak of, 36 straight games where he struck out? Right? Everybody got a book on him. And then, to Aaron Judge's credit, he adjusted. I mean, the player that I can think of that reminds me the most of Austin Meadows is Andrew Benintendi. And Benintendi got off to a great start, boom. Then he kind of tailed a bit, right? Now Benintendi's, if Meadows can be Benintendi, I mean, that's actually a worthy goal to have, because I think Benintendi's a heck of a player. Nola's got 6 wins so far. He's been great. 2.27 ERA, great. Velasquez has struck out 70, really good. Hector Neris has 9 saves so far. And Luis Garcia has 9 holds. You look at what they've done, ERA. I mean, Pivetta, Arrieta, and Nola are all between 2.27 and 3.26 on ERAs. That's not bad. To have 3-year pitchers like that. There's certain things that I look at where I try to look inside just the base ERA. One is I like to look at innings pitched to hits given up. And I want to look at strikeout to walks. So let's take Nola. 71 innings pitched. You know what? He's only given up 53 hits. You know how good you have to be to only give up 53 hits in 71 innings? How good your stuff is? 67 strikeouts, 17 walks. You're talking about a guy that's a 4-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. Terrific. Arrieta, 51 of the third, 42 hits. Terrific. Now, 35 to 17 strikeout to walks, 2-to-1. It's okay. Pivetta, 58 innings pitched, only 49 hits. Same story, same ratio as Nola, 4-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. In fact, this is like 4.5-to-1. I mean, that's good starting pitching. That's really good starting pitching right there. I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. Now, Hector Neris as a closer, I don't know. ERA of 4.5 doesn't light you up. And he's only 2.5 to 1 strikeout to walk. I'm like, I don't know. That part you're not sure about. But overall, I like this team. Yeah, because I think Kingery will bounce back. I think Hoskins will bounce back. I don't think there's any problem with either one of them. I think they're good players. They just have to get themselves untracked. I think Nick Williams has filled a really nice role for them. But the area where the Phillies have to be far more consistent, they've got to be a better, consistent hitting team. When you're hitting only .236 as a team, that's big problem. Now, what puts you 7 games over .500 is the fact that the opponents are only hitting .237 against the Phillies pitching staff. Wow. That's impressive. All right, we'll come back more in a moment. Still to come, Pete Jensen on the Stanley Cup Final on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Here's Adam Purdy with another example of how Purdy Insurance is different.
I was at home one Saturday when I got a call from a client who had just been in an auto accident with a rental car in Canada. After confirming that everyone was okay, I checked his policy and assured him that we had the proper coverages in place. Within a few minutes, I had his claim called in and he was back to enjoying his vacation.
Purdy Insurance has been answering calls like this for over 90 years.
Give Purdy Insurance a call today at 800-677-2478 to see what we can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on the show. Brought to you today by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business, whatever the insurance needs may be, they will find you the right insurance or you're covered. And they'll also make sure that you find the and get the best price. They'll search for it. And if there happens to be an incident where you need your insurance, they will be your greatest advocate. They will go to work for you immediately. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. In Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to bring in old friend. Does great work, Pete Jensen. Pete, welcome back. Great to hear you.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. And yeah, we're in the midst of a pretty exciting Stanley Cup final matchup, if game one was any indication. So happy to talk about it with you.
I mean, never have there been that many lead changes in one Stanley Cup final game. It was remarkable to watch.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was the Capitals were not; they were relatively unfazed by that raucous crowd. It was all that pageantry leading up to the game. It was very exciting. It's great storylines across the board in this series, and it really lived up to the hype in Game One. So Vegas takes the first serve, and we'll see how the Capitals respond here in Game Two. But it's interesting that that goalie storyline really was not a big factor in game one. I mean, 10 goals total, pretty wild.
Yeah, very wild. You do a lot with numbers, Pete, so let's take a look at Vegas for a moment. You know, a year ago today, as we've mentioned many times, they didn't have a single player. In fact, 100 weeks ago, they were actually allowed the opportunity to start business. So when you look at the numbers, numerically, what made them successful this year that they were able to win a division title and eventually win the Western Conference?
Yeah, their top line was one of the most powerful offensively in terms of plus-minus, also in terms of just scoring on a per-game basis. That's Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith. It's interesting that two of those guys came from the Florida Panthers. You think they probably regret that. And certainly William Karlsson. We got a little glimpse of it in the playoffs last year, but nobody would have expected him to go from from single digits in goals to 40-plus and top five in the league this year. So that's been the biggest storyline for me. They've had kind of a by-committee approach to their defense. I mean, they've had different guys step up. Colin Miller is a big one. Nate Schmidt, the former Capital, is a big one as well. These guys are taking on big minutes every other game. I mean, they really, their defenseman usage varies pretty drastically. And then, of course, their goaltending. I mean, even beyond Fleury, a lot of people forget Fleury He's having the best year of his career, regular season and postseason, as a collective season, no doubt. But there were two stretches in the regular season where he missed time with concussions, and he, they were down to. There was one point in the season even where Vegas was down to their fourth string goalie, and they were still winning games. So I think that's a testament to the lack of a weakness on this roster, and certainly the strong defense is a big reason for Fleury's success, no doubt.
Also, the fourth line, because Gerard Gallant likes to roll his lines. Their fourth line has been very effective. Now, I don't know if your analytics go deep enough to compare fourth lines at all. If it is, then what does it tell you about the fourth line for Vegas as to how good they've been this year?
Yeah, it's interesting because Ryan Reeves was acquired from the Penguins before the trade deadline. He didn't have a goal for Vegas until the clinching game in Winnipeg. And then this Thomas Nosek, two goals yesterday, that was a big surprise. And I was really surprised to see them double-shifting him after that Tom Wilson hit on Marchessault. So when Marchessault went down for a few minutes and had to leave the game for the concussion protocol, I mean, they had a fourth liner being double-shifted in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final, and this was actually not you see guys step up throughout the playoffs, but this one was pretty shocking for this stage of the game to see a performance like that all in the third period, three goals from the fourth line. I mean, you can dive into analytics all you want. I don't think many people would have seen that coming last night.
Right now, let's turn the page now to Washington. Washington's had some really good teams in recent years that could not clear the Pittsburgh hurdle.
Right.
What has allowed them, not just to clear the Pittsburgh hurdle, but, how strong are their numbers that shows that they are a Stanley Cup finalist, if not championship team?
Yeah, I mean, their power play has been outstanding in this postseason. They're entering Game 1 of the Vegas series, they were, I think, sixth all-time since the expansion era in power play conversion percentage. So that's going to be a thing that they need to get going here in this series. They were 0-for-1 in Game 1. They're going to need to draw more penalties. They're going to need to capitalize on those because these are two very strong even-strength teams, and they might need those power play goals to offset. Vegas scored a power play goal in Game 1. The Capitals didn't. If that continues, then the Capitals won't win this series. But certainly the adversity that they overcame in the Pittsburgh series, they also trailed 3-2 against the Lightning, won the last two from Braden Holtby shutouts. And then a lot of people forget the first round this postseason, they trailed Columbus. They lost the first two games at home, and it looked like they were dead. So they've overcome a lot. They've clinched all three series on the road, as has Vegas. So that's what they said. That was the first. This is the first time ever that that's happened, that both Stanley Cup finalists clinched all three series on the road in the first three rounds.
And that's amazing. I want to ask you about, obviously, Ovechkin. Ovechkin, I think, is having one of those great signature playoff runs that you would hope a great player would have. When you look at his numbers in previous years, Pete, to the numbers he's putting up this year, because you can just see the efforts there, but I'm talking pure numbers, what are you seeing?
Yeah, his shot selection has been a little bit better, especially the first few rounds of the playoffs. I mean, he's normally that ridiculously high shot volume type of player, usually leads the league in that category. His volume was a little bit lower through the first two rounds, but he was making a concerted effort to make unselfish plays, defensive plays, and he was taking higher percentage shots, which has really translated well for him. And Evgeny Kuznetsov as well has made a big difference. I know you've seen all through their careers, it's been Backstrom and Ovechkin on the same line, but they've kind of made that full-time switch over the course of this season. They still, bring him back with Backstrom every so often, but it's pretty much been Kuznetsov and Ovechkin, and I think that has made a big difference. Kuznetsov is one of the best young forwards in this league.
Now, let's talk about the goalies. We know, as you mentioned, you talked about Fleury extensively. What do you see in Braden Holtby? Because obviously he came up with back-to-back shutouts in 6 and 7 with everything on the line. Obviously there was no shutout last night. Nobody was shutting anybody out in that. But what have you seen from him, Pete?
Yeah, he's 8-3 on the road after yesterday, so one blip on the radar there. But he has been—he's really bounced back after what was the worst regular season statistically of his NHL career. He had almost the 3 goals against. He was one of those 40-plus win guys each of the previous, I think, 3-4 seasons prior to this season. But and another thing about that Columbus series was. It was funny, Philip Grubauer, the backup, started each of the first 2 games. So Holtby
That's
has
right.
come a long way this postseason and has shaken off some of those past playoff failures and even those series deficits this time around. So, yeah, Braden Holtby is a big difference maker the rest of the way. And, yeah, I just think it's been very impressive to see how he, you know, had his season flash before his eyes. He wasn't even going to play in the playoffs at the start of things.
Yeah, people forget Barry Trotz had a gigantic decision to make on Holtby,
right?
And didn't start out with that being the decision. And then when he got his chance, he played himself into this spot where he looks like the Braden Holtby we've watched the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny that game, even that game 3 that against Columbus that he started, it went to double overtime, and it was clearly a toss-up game. But Holtby went on to win all 3 road games in that series to eliminate the Blue Jackets pretty convincingly, and that was a desperate Columbus team that has never won a Stanley Cup playoff series, a very talented team. So that was pretty. That was kind of when I got the sense that that was the turning point of the Capitals' season. And even though they trail 1-0 in this series, I think this is far from over, and I think it's a great chance that it's going to go 6 or 7 games.
You had to work with a lot of numbers at NHL.com as well as a lot of video as well. Is there something that came up during the course of the season where even you sat back and went, how about that? I didn't realize that.
I mean, it's certainly this Vegas thing has been the biggest surprise. I mean, we've seen a lot of teams drastically turn their season around and make the playoffs. Colorado, remember they were like 20 points worse than any other team in the league last year, and they sneaked into the playoffs, and New Jersey Devils as well. But yeah, this Vegas team, I just think it's amazing that they've been able to put this together, because, you know, coming into the season, they took on some they played into the hands of a lot of teams around the league in the expansion draft. They didn't just pick their team. They had a lot of side deals, a lot of salary dumps, kind of like, here, take Riley Smith, and then you could also have Jonathan Marchessault if you take Riley Smith. And they had a couple of those side deals, and I just think it's been amazing to see how George McPhee, the GM, evaluated this roster and also worked hand-in-hand with each team and created deals that the teams felt were good deals for them, and they also stockpiled a lot of draft picks for the future. So, to me, the biggest takeaway from this season is Vegas and just how they've put together such a strong roster in the present and also set themselves up for the future success. So this team's not going anywhere for a couple of years, that's for sure.
Well, if I'm the people running Seattle, I would hope they took meticulous notes.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll see if that, at the next Board of Governors meetings, if that whole thing becomes approved, but it seems to be like the same level of interest and same level of confidence from everything I've heard. So we'll see how it all plays out, but that's going to be really interesting for Seattle. You have to expect that they're going to want the same type of rules at the very least for their expansion draft if that were to happen in the next couple of years.
Well, I think people around here forget. I mean, that's how Vegas acquired Fleury. They made a deal with, I think, we'll take Fleury, but we'll take no one else.
Right.
And that was a deal they made with Pittsburgh. That's how Pittsburgh only lost Fleury, and only Fleury, who wasn't going to start this year.
Yeah, and there were a couple other teams, too. There was Minnesota. It's funny. Here is Alex Tuck, who's been a great secondary scorer, and he's one of the great young players on this team. Here's Alex Tuck, and we want you to take Eric Howla, who's been their number 2 center and a strong faceoff guy. There was also Anaheim that said, we don't want you to touch our young defenseman, Josh Manson, but here's Shea Theodore, who's played He's been a nice prospect for them. He's had some bumps in the road, but he's played on their first power play unit for much of the season. So this is just a combination of so many different great decisions by Vegas and a lot of them orchestrated by George McPhee, kind of to maybe not to trick these teams, but to get more out of the expansion draft than just picking a player.
Well, I think this has done wonders for the NHL. I mean, they made a great choice going in there because the fans are really into it. And I've been to the arena, so I know how nice that is.
Nice. Yeah, it's amazing to see how this market is embracing the team and how, I mean, this time last year, let's be honest, nobody was talking about hockey in the desert, in Nevada, in Las Vegas, one of the entertainment capitals of the world. And right now it's become the biggest attraction there. So how great is that for broadening the horizons of this league?
Well, last night they're showing thousands of people in the plaza outside the arena. Right? Now, look, if that was a year ago, all those people would be in a casino.
Yeah, definitely. You have to imagine a lot of people who were roaming around yesterday.
Now, Pete, it wouldn't be you. You'd be down at Paris getting something to eat. That's just not your MO. I know.
No, it's a fun scene, man. It looks really exciting, and it's a great showcase for the game from a fan standpoint. And then the way that game played out yesterday, where a lot of people are excited. The ratings did great, and at a time where the NBA is kind of stuck in the same matchup for the four straight years with Golden State and Cleveland, I mean, this is a great opportunity to capitalize on.
Pete, it's always a pleasure. Really enjoy talking hockey or anything else with you. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Steve. Great catching up.
Pete Jensen, NHL.com. And we'll come back, wrap up the show in a moment, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. Great to have Pete Jensen on. Today to talk about the Stanley Cup Final, we have Dan Devine on the show coming up tomorrow, NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We'll break down the NBA Finals between the Cavaliers and the Warriors. It's really great to see a completely different matchup. Okay. Great. Seen this movie before. It's like, you wonder why Solo didn't make a lot of money over the weekend. I mean, it made a lot of money, but not what they thought. What'd Solo make, 103?
I think that was for the entire holiday weekend, yes.
Right. Yeah. And they expected over 150.
Yeah.
Now, it's not Jonas Satama's fault.
No.
Jonas plays Chewbacca. As far as I'm concerned, Jonas is on track now to get one of those little statues. Former Nittany Lion basketball player is Chewbacca.
Disney shares dropped 2.4% following the poor box office performance of Solo. I mean, we got to talk them down off the bridge here. They got to calm down. I mean, geez.
Well, you know what's amazing though is that the movie, like every part of what Disney has, seems to have a domino effect on the others. Remember the years ago when ESPN was really cooking along and doing well, and they still announced layoffs and cutbacks and things like that. Well, that was, even though ESPN was financially doing fine, there was that Clooney movie, Tomorrowland. Tomorrowland lost $150 million. Okay. It's a big number. Okay. Well, it affected every other part of the Disney operation, so ESPN had to do its part. Just like when ESPN is struggling with cable cutting, it's affecting everything else. Now, Disney bounced back and did a brilliant job, and they bought the Star Wars franchise. Didn't they also buy the Marvel Comics franchise? You know more about this stuff than I do.
Good question.
I thought Disney bought the Marvel Comics part. Was Black Panther, for example, a Disney product? I mean,
yes.
Not
okay. Yes, Disney. Disney. They bought Marvel for like $4 billion.
Yeah, Yeah. Now, Black Panther's a part of that. Black Panther was highly successful.
That was completely off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, highly successful. They also bought Star Wars with the idea that, look, they're going to do...
Yeah, Disney actually bought them close to 10 years ago, back in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And it, for the most part, it's worked. And I'm not saying $103 million is not working.
3-day period for Solo, $83.3 million. Now, it's not going to open up in Japan until June 29th.
But they also have a certain projection they're looking to get to. And if they're not getting there, it becomes a problem.
Cost about $250 million to make. And that was kind of that's actually kind of a conservative number.
All right. Well, I mean, they'll get there. That's not going to be an issue in terms of getting there. But they may not end up with the profit margin they had hoped for. I mean, everybody has a projection, for example. I mean, if we get a sale in a month from digital media, we've exceeded expectations.
That's right. Well, there's going to be another Jurassic World sequel coming out June 22nd, so they only have really a couple more weeks here to make hay to try to get something.
I saw Jurassic Park the first time. I was like, whoa, okay. And I liked watching it. But even during the course of that movie, I got sick of for goodness sakes, here comes another dinosaur to kill him. Great. I mean, after a while, I mean, some of these movies don't have what you call a lot of balance in them.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.